Before we get going, here's the bit where I remind you that nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets. You're about to listen to a very special preview edition of the Grant Williams podcast featuring my very special guest, Michael Howe of Cross Border Capital. The topics under discussion in this podcast episode are based around liquidity and the options facing the Treasury and the Fed. And what Michael had to say is incredibly important for anybody investing in markets. And as you'll hear, the case he lays out for understanding liquidity is really, really powerful. Every episode of the Grant Williams podcast, including The Endgame, The Super Terrific Happy Hour, The Narrative Game, This Week in Doom, Shifts Happen, and of course Chaos Theory, is available to Copper and Silver Tier subscribers at my website, grant-williams.com. Copper Tier subscribers get access to all the podcasts, while members of the Silver Tier get both the podcasts and my monthly newsletter, Things That Make You Go, Hmm. So, if you enjoy what you hear on the show and you want more high-quality content like it, then please make your way over to grant-williams.com and join our excited community today. And with that, on with the show. Michael, welcome back to the podcast, my friend. So good to see you. It's been a while.
Great to be here, Grant. Yeah, it's been a while, but great to be here now.
The world carries on, regardless of whether you and I are sitting here chatting about it or not. There's so much to talk about because liquidity is such an important part of everything that's going on. But I want to start with a tweet of yours, or a response of yours I saw, actually, I think it was this morning I saw it, maybe it was you wrote it yesterday and I just woke up to it this morning, but someone was talking about liquidity and where it all started from, and you made the, they were talking about Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank last year, and you jumped in and said, no, it began before that. So I don't want to take your thunder, but it struck me that you were absolutely right, and I wanted to talk about this with you. So where did this liquidity swing start and why? And let's trace it through from there if we can.
The first thing to say is that money moves markets. And certainly since 2008, central banks have been the main source of liquidity or money in global markets. What is the remit of central banks? Some might say it's employment, some may say it's inflation. The reality is that the remit is to preserve the integrity of the sovereign debt markets. And that is beyond anything that they're trying to do. If there are any wobbles in sovereign debt markets, you look at the alacrity with which central banks and policymakers come in and try and support things. Now, what was the debacle, or what was the event, the signal event that changed our thinking? It was the British gilt crisis in September of 2022, when the budget of the incoming new Prime Minister Liz Truss was basically thrown out by the markets. The gilt market sold off aggressively, and that was a wake-up call to Treasury ministers and central bankers worldwide that these markets are no longer robust. They're potentially fragile. You need support. You can't just take these markets for granted. Bond vigilantes, as they used to be called, you know, back in the 80s or whatever, have come back again. Governments can't get away with these things. They've got to nurture these markets very carefully. And what we've seen pretty much since then is global liquidity picking up. Central banks have moved more and more to the easing tack. As we speak now, one third of global central banks or world central banks are easing their liquidity policies. The US has been, you know, the US is doing it. The US may have been slightly lagging this time, but nonetheless, it's doing it. And despite the rhetoric that comes out of the Federal Reserve that they are undertaking QT, they've got a tight monetary policy, the facts don't stack up and prove that, because Fed liquidity and bank reserves are both rising. Bank reserves are now up to $3.6 trillion. There's been a very significant jump even in the last 12 months. And if you look at the markets clearly aren't believing them. Look at liquidity-sensitive factors like tech stocks, or look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a barometer of liquidity these days, and it's soaring.
So, Michael, help people understand, because this is such a fascinating topic, and it's something that I think a lot of people get confused about, because when we talk about Fed easing, people are generally thinking about interest rates and them cutting the discount rate. But when you're talking about liquidity, easing liquidity conditions, it's a very different mechanism. And it's something that is arcane enough that only people that really understand the plumbing understand how this easing works. So to help people understand the difference between cutting rates and easing financial conditions?
Okay, well, I think the first thing to say is, why is there a preoccupation with interest rates? Okay, and that has been pushed by the sort of economics fraternity, who basically spend all their time worrying about interest rates. And that's really the centerpiece of most economic textbooks. But it's kind of a fake narrative, because interest rates are not the most important thing. If you come back to money, the price of money is not the rate of interest. It's the exchange rate is the price of money. What you've got to look at, these facts, are interest rates are the cost of credit, something very different. Now, in a world which is dominated by capital spending, in other words, you've got, let's say, a young economy, an immature economy that is capitalizing fast, where you've got a lot of capex, I'll come quietly and say that the cost of capital, i.e. the rate of interest, can be very important, okay? But we're not in that world anymore. We're in a very different world. We're in a mature economic world where debt is paramount, where the world economy is saddled with $350 trillion of debt, and that debt has to be refinanced. So financial markets are not new capital raising mechanisms anymore. They're basically debt refinancing mechanisms. And every year, you've got to refinance $70 trillion of debt. Now, if you take a sort of homespun example of thinking of a home mortgage. Now, if you've got a home mortgage that you need to roll, okay, you need to find somebody, some financial institution that will do the roll. In other words, you need liquidity or you need balance sheet capacity to do the roll. What the rate of interest is kind of the secondary thing, because unless you get the roll, you're homeless. The same with corporate debt. You've got to get that roll done. So otherwise, the corporation defaults. Now, that's why we come back to the fact that liquidity is really the paramount thing. And if you don't get the roll in the debt markets, you get refinancing crises. And hey, just look back, think about the last few financial crises we've had. Going back over the last two or three decades, they've all been refinancing crises. Okay, and that's the reality. And the issue going forward is, with this huge amount of debt saddling markets, we can get more refinancing crises if central banks are not alert to the amount of liquidity in the system. Now, the preoccupation with interest almost goes back to sort of Keynesian times in economics. And Keynes was very much of the view, because he dismissed the idea that interest was important, but he had the notion that interest rates should be pulled down to zero, because then you would achieve the euthanasia of the rentier class. In other words, those people that clipped coupons and lived off interest. And that was an objective, a social objective at the time. Now, the problem with that agenda, and I would say that particular way of thinking has influenced policymakers through the decades, and it's coming back again now to haunt us in this ridiculous R-star notion, which is, again, a fake narrative. There's no such thing as R-star, except in the mind of Fed economists. But this R-star is just an excuse to try and get interest rates down again. Now, the problem with getting interest rates down is, whoa, what does it do? It incentivizes debt. And what we don't want is lots more debt piled on top of more debt. And that's the problem the world economy's got. And if you look back to the history of different economies, when the debt GDP ratio starts to soar to high levels, I'm talking in the region of 150, 200% or so, which Britain actually went through in the 1950s and 60s, it destroys the economic fabric. It gives you slow economic growth. Look at Britain, look at Japan. These are great examples of these huge debt loads. Unfortunately, America, which has been the engine of the world economy, is getting into that same debt trap.
Yeah, it's funny. At the beginning of that, when you said, you know, we've got all this $350 trillion of debt and all that debt needs to be, if I paused you there and I polled 100 listeners and said, finish this sentence, I reckon the vast majority of them said repaid. But of course, you're absolutely right. It's refinanced. And when you think of it that way, it completely changes the way you think about all of this. Because I think this idea that it has to be repaid is completely wrong, because no one is, I mean, the US is never going to repay their debt, right?
And yeah, and the corporate sector, nobody repays debt.
It's exactly right. And so once you think of this, the world we live in, as a world where the ability to refinance is imperative, it helps you understand that it isn't the economy that's going to dictate policy. It really isn't. And we're seeing that now, I think, with the Fed and how they're responding to things and how they're, as you said, talking one way and acting another. So let's go into, before we kind of circle back to what you said just now, but let's go into the Fed, what they're telling the market they're doing and what they're actually doing and why. Because I think that's, again, another crucial part of this jigsaw for people to understand.
Yeah, and I think let me also say, Grant, that let's not think solely of the Federal Reserve. Let's think of
them as a collective for us all.
Because I think one of the things we're seeing very clearly is the two are working very much hand in hand at the moment. And I think that would be a surprise were they not, given the fact that Janet, Treasury Secretary, used to be chairperson of the Fed. So she knows the inner workings. And there's, I think, she's not only the most probably political Treasury Secretary I can remember for a long, long time. She's also working very closely with the Federal Reserve here. Now, what is going on? Let's look at the mechanics of the Fed balance sheet without getting necessarily too wonkish. Now, I learned a lot of my finance or whatever being at Salomon Brothers. And Salomon Brothers, back when I was there in the late 80s through the 90s, was basically focused almost exclusively in research terms on flow of funds analysis, understanding flow of funds. That was the gift of Henry Kaufman, who was then head of research. And a lot of the writings that Henry did at the time are well worth digging out and rereading, because they're all coming back to haunt us, a lot of his prophecies. Now, basically, flow of funds is important because it's very much different to traditional economics. Traditional economics looks at uses of funds. In other words, what's happening to the consumer, what's capital spending doing, what are exports, what's government spending. It's all about uses of funds. What we're focused on is sources of funds. In other words, how do you get the cash into the system in the first place? And a lot of that comes through liquidity generation. In other words, the expansion of credit or what the central banks are doing. And that's an important thing to understand. Now, we, in a book I wrote maybe about 5 years ago called Capital Wars, I outlined a lot of the, let's say, the Fed-watching theory that was created at Salomon Brothers. And one of the things that I talked about then was something called Fed liquidity. Now, the concept has been slightly refined because of new line items on the Fed balance sheet. But Fed liquidity is the amount of the amount of the balance sheet that actually creates liquidity in the money market. So the expansion of the balance sheet per se can be completely disconnected from the amount of liquidity. And what you need to
The full conversation is available to subscribers to the copper and silver tiers of my website, grant-williams.com. Nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets.